We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky, and I'm coming to you from the beautiful weather up here in Northville, Minnesota, at least for now, Matt. Maybe next week we'll have snow. Who knows? Who knows when you're in Minnesota?
That's
and
right.
I have with me...
This is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran Church in St. Louis, Missouri, where I can guarantee we will not have snow anytime soon. This is John, you're a smart man going up there.
Wrestling with the basics. And just two things real quick. First of all, so as we're closing last week's episode, we hope you got to listen to that. Matt was concerned because there was like a little glitch on the internet. And he said, be sure and let the people know that so they can edit that. And I'm thinking, Matt, no one edits our show. Have you listened to our show, actually, and when it comes out as a podcast? No one would ever. Obviously, it's not me. No one's editing it.
Yeah. It's raw. It is the first cut. It is authentic. Rest of the basics.
If there was editing, it probably would run about 10 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I hear other podcasts, you know, like the Seminary, Concordia yep. Seminary produces a podcast, and they sound really slick. They sound great. It's like, yeah, maybe if we had editing, it would sound that good too, but yeah, maybe not. Yeah, like you said, it would be a pretty brief show.
You haven't listened to our finished product, have you? Because you'd know, yeah, there's no editing there.
Yeah, a lot
and this is an example. This is an example of where there's no editing. Man, I've been getting the emails, the letters. People are saying, hey, you promised us dumb jokes, and now it's almost a month and a half, and we haven't had any dumb jokes. So have you got a timer there handy, Matt?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Yes. One second. Let me get my cell phone out. I've got my timer.
Because, I mean, we got more important stuff to talk about than dumb jokes. But I think we will allot ourselves 1 minute of dumb jokes on this episode.
Oh, boy.
I've got them all ready to go here.
All right, John.
Let me know. Are you ready?
Okay, this is a fun segment. I'm ready. And go.
I just killed a huge spider running across the floor with my shoe. I don't care how big the spider is. No one steals my shoe. When I go fishing, I usually bring music along. I like something catchy. I found a present for my mother-in-law in the attic. I'll take it up to her later. Oh, you'll like this one, Matt. A pirate went to the doctor and said, I have moles on me back. The doctor said, it's okay, they're benign. The pirate replied, count again, I think there be 10. I became hooked on auctions after only going once, going twice, going three times. I read the other day that humans eat more bananas than monkeys. As far as I know, I've never seen anyone eat a monkey. Oh, you can always tell the gender of ants just by placing them in water. If they sink, girl ant. If they float, boy ant.
Boy ant.
Is the minute not up?
You got like 2 seconds.
All right. I just bought a TV and it says built-in antenna. I don't even know where antenna that is. I should have stopped at 2 seconds.
Stop where you're ahead there, John.
I should have.
So we're at a minute, 7 seconds, and you got in 9 jokes.
Okay. I got to repeat that. So it was a built-in antenna. Built-in antenna. See, built-in antenna, and I don't even know where that is.
Yes.
See, like antenna
I think we got it, John.
It wasn't worth explaining either, was it, Matt? No, I don't know. If we had editing.
Right. That would have been hilarious if we had editing. Yeah. Hilarious. Yeah.
All right. We promised people this. We promised people that we were going to tell them about Elijah and a story that you thought was very, very relevant to what's going on in our lives as well.
Yeah.
So
thanks, John.
What is that all about, man?
Yeah. So we've been looking at the Gospel of Mark the last few weeks during the summer months. Now, if you go to a church that follows the lectionary, we kind of strayed from Mark. So yeah. We're straying from Mark. You're wrestling the basics too. And I think looking at an account that isn't all that common. Okay. It's one that we don't know. We didn't learn it in Sunday school, right? It wasn't at Vacation Bible School, but it's one that I think there's some good things to learn from and glean from it. So to just sort of set the scene here, give a little background, we're talking about Elijah. So Elijah is one of the Old Testament prophets. Elijah lives after the Exodus out of Egypt. He lives after the time of the judges in Israel. He lives after the time of faithful King David. Okay, so Elijah's taking place later than that. So Elijah now lives during a time when there's a terrible king and queen by the name of Ahab and Jezebel, King Ahab, Queen Jezebel. So they are probably the most infamous duo, king and queen in the Bible, just terrible rulers, mainly because Jezebel, it seems, especially introduces the worship of Baal. So Baal is this false god, of course, and not only do they worship Baal, but they also even force their subjects to worship Baal.
Jezebel, she is a foreign woman, isn't she?
Yeah.
Do I remember that correctly?
Exactly. Yeah,
so it's another case of where the Israelite king marrying someone outside of the religion.
Yeah, you know, Ahab should have heeded God's word, married someone, you know, who shared that same belief in the Lord, as dim as it may have been for Ahab, but instead, no, exactly. For whatever reason, maybe it was political gain, maybe it was lust, who knows? He married
Jezebel.
She was
a looker. She was a looker. I don't know if you know, have you ever seen pictures of Jezebel? She was a looker. I could see where that went.
Well, but she thought she was a looker. There's this, remember her death? She paints her eyes and tries to look beautiful, and then she Yehu comes there and they push her out the window and she dies. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
And the dogs loved her.
And the dogs eat her. Yeah, that's the best part, John. Oh boy, yeah, it's another one we don't learn in Sunday school and Vacation.
They skip over that one about the dogs eating her. Yeah, rightfully so.
So so Elijah, you gotta just to put yourself in his position. So you're called to be a prophet, called to speak God's word in this context, in the context where the king, queen hate you and hate the Lord. And that's not an easy thing. So on Elijah's journey, his journey as a prophet, there are mountaintop highs and there are deep valley lows. And what we're going to look at today in chapter 19 is one of the valleys. It's one of the low points in Elijah's ministry. Looking before that, though, because this is important, what happens immediately before this is a mountaintop high, quite literally a mountaintop high. So this is where we have Elijah and the prophets of Baal. So this is an account that we probably do remember from Sunday school. So John, do you want to help recap part of that account of Elijah and the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel and what happens there with those two altars?
Well, it just occurs to me, it kind of parallels the things we've been doing in the New Testament, because, we've just finished up this story about Jesus feeding 5,000 people.
Yes.
And of course, it sets the crowds wild. Everyone's, but we knew he could heal people, which is great if you got a cold, but this guy could actually feed you every day by multiplying fish and loaves. Yeah. And so he's really, it's at the peak, really, of Jesus' ministry. And yet, ironically, this is the thing that begins his downfall. What happens after that is horrible. And so we got the same thing here with Elijah, because now Elijah has confronted the prophets of Baal, dramatically defeats the prophets of Baal, right? So let's have a contest. You build your altar, I'll build my altar. You pray to your God, I'll pray to my God. We see who answers. Pretty straightforward. Biden isn't running anymore. Harris, Trump. See, I'm still behind the times. You guys should do this. Let's just put it out in public and see which God answers you. And of course, they cut themselves and they cry out and nothing happens. And then, of course, Elijah makes it even harder because he soaks his altar with water and he prays to his God. And the whole bunch of them get consumed, the altars and the prophets of Baal. They all get killed. But see, that's the point. If there's any question about who the real God is, it's pretty well been established. But as a result of that, Jezebel decides, well, you killed my prophets, Elijah. Now I'm going to do the same to you. Let's see how powerful your God is. Does that give you enough background there?
Oh, yeah, it's great, John. Thanks. It's a fun account, and as they try to get Baal's attention, I love how it describes how, it's just so silent. What does it say here? There is no voice, no answer, no one paid attention. You know, it's just emphasizing there is no Baal, right? He's a false god. He's silent.
And of course, we have that classic line that we all love from Sunday school, where Elijah says, "Oh, maybe he's out going to the bathroom. maybe that's why he's not answering you."
Maybe he's on vacation. Maybe he's going to the bathroom. I mean, and really, that's what Elijah says. You know,
he starts
to just mock these false prophets that have misled so many people.
And as a 12-year-old, I remember, maybe Baal's not going to the bathroom.
Isn't that great? And the Bible's so good.
I loved it as a junior high kid.
Exactly. It's good stuff. So again, as you said, the Lord shows that he is God. He consumes everything. And then after that, we see that Elijah orders that the prophets of Baal be killed. So this is, 450 prophets. So, wow. You can kind of tell, as you alluded to, how Jezebel was probably humiliated, because not only has her God been shown to be without power, but also now even her prophets have been killed by the sword. So what happens is Elijah gets wind of this and he begins to flee. So in today's account, we're getting into 1 Kings chapter 19. We come across two messengers. The first messenger has pretty bad news. So if you could read chapter 19, how about verses 1-3?
And it does strike me two things. So here Elijah has just seen the power of God, and yet now he's running away. Yeah. Although my first reaction is, well, apparently he doesn't have enough faith. But then my other reaction is, well, no, maybe that is a smart thing to do. Even though we believe in God, I don't think we need to put ourselves in a dangerous position. I think part of believing in God is we seek our security and safety. Well, anyway, 1-3, Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword, as you said. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid. So that answers my question. So it was a fear. And he rose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there.
Yeah. So, wow. To get that news from this messenger that by this time tomorrow, right, you got 24 hours, Elijah, and you're going to be killed. I'm going to take your life. This is Jezebel's pledge, it seems, that she will kill Elijah. So then, he is afraid, can we blame Elijah, right?
Yeah.
He's afraid. He runs for his life, and he comes to Beersheba. He leaves his servant there. I think that's interesting. So he leaves his servant there, and then Elijah goes on by himself. And we'll read that in the following verses, but he even goes on another day's journey into the wilderness. So I almost get the impression that he is trying to make himself as safe as possible. If he gets into a desolate wilderness place, maybe he'll have a chance of saving his life, right? If Jezebel doesn't know where to find him, she can't kill him. And that's kind of the impression you get.
So did he leave his servant behind, you think, for fear that the servant might get killed along with him?
Possibly so. I mean, it's just that one line there. Yeah. I don't know if we can give an answer. But I think that's one possibility, if Jezebel's going to do me in, well, at least I'll save the life of my servant.
Yeah.
She might be after me, but at least I can spare his life, right? Perhaps so.
How far do you want me to read, Matt?
Yeah, let's read verses 4-6.
But he, that's Elijah himself, went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again.
Okay, thanks. So he comes to this desolate place, and all he can find is a broom tree. So a broom tree is kind of a scrubby shrub. It's maybe not more than 10, 12 feet tall. So, I mean, this is not a great deal of shade and comfort, but it's the best you get in the wilderness, I suppose.
Yeah.
So he's under this broom tree, and then he's exasperated. He asks that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." You know, it is enough, Lord. You know, Elijah, in fearing for his life, says, basically, I've had enough, right? It's enough. And then, you know, that gets us thinking, I think, about our own lives, right? You know, has there been a time when we've cried out to the Lord, "Lord, it's enough. This is enough." You know, and I think of, you know, maybe it's the loss of a job, or maybe it's an addiction that we are struggling with. Maybe we're enduring some sort of abuse in our life, a physical, emotional, whatever it might be. Maybe it's the pain of a loved one straying away from the faith because we know that, boy, they're headed down a dark path. And we aren't crying out, "It's enough," because Jezebel's chasing us, but just because life is rough in this sinful, fallen world. And there are times when we're going to cry out, "It is enough. It's enough, Lord." And if we haven't cried out that yet in our lives, well, then, wow, you're pretty fortunate. But guess what? You probably will at some point.
Yeah.
There's going to come a time when it's just too much for us. "It is enough, Lord. It is enough." And that's exactly how Elijah feels now. So, you know, maybe we have those Elijah moments in our lives, too, where we think, boy, it's enough.
And I really like the phrase there too. I am no better than my fathers.
Yeah, that's great.
Because it's not just then that he's feels like giving up because the situation is so horrible, but I think he's probably reflecting on the fact that he is a sinner. In fact, I can kind of see him thinking, "Yeah, I was kind of proud there at the moment when I had all the prophets of Baal killed because it seemed like, man, I'm really on top of things, and now I realize, yeah, I'm no better than any of my forefathers. I am a man of doubt. I'm a man of fear. You know, if I thought I was this man of great trust, well, apparently that isn't true either, you know." And you're right. We do have those instances. As you said, I pray for our listeners that they don't come often, but they do come. They do come. And I think, but see, I think all of this is good because I think we can look at our problems and say, "Well, that's not have anything to do with me," you know. But I think we really start making progress when we realize, well, yeah, it probably does have something to do with me. If nothing else, it shows the fact that I'm maybe not as faithful and strong and courageous as I thought I was. But see, that's always good. That's always a good thing to know your weakness. Because let me tell you this, the Bible's pretty clear that when people are cocky, I can pretty well tell you how that's all going to end. Okay? The mighty will be brought low, Mary tells us. But those that are low, I can also pretty much guarantee you that the Lord will eventually lift them up and deliver them. So, and what I really like is the fact that he's saying this to the Lord. He isn't just meditating on how terrible things are, but he says, "It is enough now, O Lord." I don't think his prayer was really good about taking away my life.
Yeah.
But at least he knew to pray too. He knew who to pray to. And the other thing, the Lord will take care of. All right. All right, go ahead, Matt. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, and what I really want to focus on is then these closing verses, and yeah. I think they very much support what you just said, John, right? Pride comes before a fall, and I think this message from the second messenger, the angel, and the word angel means messenger, I think really speaks to that.
Okay.
And I really like what this angel has to say. So if you want to read the remaining verses through verse 8, so I think verses 7 and 8.
"And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you.' And he rose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mount of God."
Yeah. So, you know, God provides these cakes and this water to eat and drink. It looks like Elijah takes a nap. that can't hurt, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the angel wakes him up, right? Just touches him, wakes him up. And then this is what I really want to focus on, though. Arise and eat, for what? The journey is too great for you.
Yeah.
The journey is too great for you. And I think that is really telling, that the journey is too great for him. You know, and, you know, we think of perhaps our own lives, too, our own life journey, right? It's too great for us. Quick story. You know, we just went on this trip to England, and it was wonderful as a family. My wife and our two kids and I. But right before that, a few weeks before that, I had my gallbladder taken out.
Oh, that's so, right.
Yeah. That's right. So I asked the doctor, can I still go on this journey, right? Can I still go on this trip? And the doctor said, well, yeah, that's fine. Under one condition, the one condition is you can't lift anything heavy. Yep. Don't lift anything heavy, right? Post-surgery, that's kind of the rule of thumb, right? So we went on this trip, and that meant no lifting luggage, John. Ah. So Lisa and Noah and even our daughter Anna lifted my suitcase anytime we had to put it somewhere on a plane or lift it into a bus or on a, you know, the tube. And that wasn't easy for me. You know, I'm used to being dad, to being, you know, the husband, and, you know, I'm used to helping, and now here I'm the one that needs to be helped. So whether I liked it or not, the journey was too great for me. And I think that's hard for us to admit sometimes. It's hard for me to admit, right? But yet that was the truth. And I think of our own lives too, right? Our journey of life, you know, we have mountaintop experiences like Elijah too. You know, maybe it's not with 400 prophets of Baal that we defeat, but yeah, you know, those wonderful, joyous times. But we also have those valleys in our life too, like the one that Elijah is going through in our text today. And during all times, but especially those valleys, we begin to realize the journey is too much for us. On our own, the journey is too much for us. And, you know, I like to think that on Wrestling with the Basics, we recognize that and we have a solution to that. God's word gives us the solution. And it's not that we have to be smarter or richer, or that we have to enumerate on Wrestling with the Basics, you know, 12 habits that'll guarantee that the journey won't be too much for you in this life. Because I think sometimes we want to hear that. Our ears are kind of itching for that sort of thing. And we want some kind of solution. How am I going to overcome this journey? How am I going to make it? But that's not the answer. You know, the answer is, well, to recognize, yes, and admit that in humility, the journey is too much for me. This life is too much for me. But I think that the beautiful gospel of it is, you know, the journey is too great for you. Yep, no doubt. But also the truth is God provides for you greatly on the journey. God provides for you greatly. And we see that with Elijah, right? We see him provide these cakes, this water. It sustains him the next 40 days. And you know, more important than that, you know, through that then, God preserves Elijah's life. He keeps him safe. You know, someone who was going to die in 24 hours, now he's going on a 40-day journey because God has sustained him. Yeah, the journey's too great for you, but God still provides for us greatly.
Yeah. And see, so what happens is we have these times in our lives when we just feel like we're overwhelmed and we don't know what to do, and the problems are greater than what we can handle. And what we don't realize is that's pretty much every day of our life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whether we realize it or not.
We get cocky and we think, oh, we got everything under control. You know, I got a decent job. I got money coming in and I'm paying my bills. And we just aren't really aware of all the horrible, terrible. But what was it that Luther said? You need to realize that the devil, he's got his fire arrows aimed at you. You may not be aware of it, but that's all going on. And this is a world that is full of earthquakes and floods and what have you. So if any of us were really honest, we'd say, how are we going to get through this any day of our life? But of course we do. That's exactly the point. And we do again because God does bless us, and he does bless us with what we need for this bodily life and existence. But even better than that, he blesses us with this beautiful word that you and I are have been appointed to share with people, that he's there all the time, not just when things are good, but especially in times of struggle and trial. And he will deliver us from all problems. Now, of course, here's the catch. Ultimately, what he's going to have to do to deliver us from our problems is for us to die. Now that I'm 71, I begin to realize, oh, I see now, if I'm going to get rid of my sin and my lust and my anger and my selfishness, yeah, I'm probably going to have to die. If I thought that was going to get better as I got older, that's not going to happen. And of course, I'm not looking for that now, Lord. If you're listening, it's okay. Yes. I can put up, even though it's more than I can handle. I'm all right with doing that for a while longer. But yeah, he is going to take care of us and then finally deliver us from all of this stuff. And not just you and me, but all of the people we love and care for. That's what makes it exciting. I wouldn't want him to take me away unless I also knew he was going to bring with me like you. I'm glad that you and I will be up there in heaven. Do you think they'll let us do a show up there?
Probably not, Jeff.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe if we drop the dumb jokes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cut it out, guys.
That's probably so.
So I guess just a concluding thought here. This reading was paired with the gospel reading of Jesus talking about himself as the bread of life. So I think, you know, in this journey's too much for us. Too great for us, but God provides for us greatly. And I think that that's the key way in which he does it. He provides himself. Jesus is the bread of life. He gives his flesh for the life of the world. And we think of his giving of his life, certainly on the cross, as he enters the valley of the shadow of death there, even on Mount Calvary. And then we think of how he gives of himself in worship. We think of especially the Lord's Supper. Which I think is kind of cool. So, you know, the angel says to Elijah, arise and eat, the journey's too great for you. Hmm. And, you know, as a pastor, we're able to say to God's people, arise and eat because the journey's too great for you. And people stand up and they come to the Lord's table and receive the bread of life. So kind of that same message too, that the angel said for Elijah. So also God promises to us, and even a greater way with not cakes and water, but the bread of life.
So I have a suggestion. Let's do that. And again, you know, we make our plans and then we don't always follow through. So we're not making any promises, people. But shall we pick up that text then too next week? Let's talk about the text that is paired, like you said, with this, where Jesus proclaims that he's the bread of life.
Sure.
Because that's an interesting text, because it's very similar, as I said earlier, to what we have here. Because when Jesus says those things, things aren't going well. Things are about to go horribly, horribly wrong. But again, maybe that's something that we can learn from that as well. Matt, any final comment as we wrap up this episode?
Yeah, just reiterate again, you know, again, the journey's too great for you, but God provides for you greatly on that journey, especially through the one who is the bread of life.
Well, thank you for listening to us. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.